Welcome to The Gods We Belong To, an urban fantasy noir podcast. The Gods We Belong To tells one continuous story in order, and it's important to start at the beginning. So, first timers, it's back to episode one for you. Now, my faithful friends, take a beat, take a breath, and let's check in with Alex. Chapter 14, Epilogue. So, that's my story. I told you you wouldn't believe it. Hell, I lived it, and some days I don't even believe it. But there it is. And here I am, piloting my mostly trusty vehicle back to Casa Alex. Next to me on the passenger seat is tonight's haul, one camera loaded with pics of Alan sloppily screwing his secretary. Not exactly saving the world, but it is a whole hell of a lot safer. Alan's right hook notwithstanding. And it pays. Well. I haven't had so much as a peep from my creepy great-granddad since I got here, which suits me fine. I'm almost home before late-night hunger hits and my favorite Vietnamese noodle shop is still open. I park and wander in, nodding a silent hello to Kim, the lady who works the red-eye shift as both hostess and cook. She doesn't seem to speak much English, and my Vietnamese is pretty much non-existent. But this is far from the first time I've been here, and she knows my order like the back of her hand. Large pho with brisket, rare beef, and meatballs. She nods back at me, smiles, and I sit to eagerly await my soup. This time of night, I'm usually the only customer in here, but not tonight. I hear the front door open behind me, and something in my head starts tingling. I swear I can smell spices like baking pumpkin pie, cinnamon, nutmeg, clove. Warm, sweet, and soothing. I'm about to turn my head when I hear a voice, both gentle and strong, filled with indescribable grace. Be still, Alex. You have nothing to fear from me. A wave of comfort washes over me as though nothing could ever hurt me. I'm calm, safe, at peace. He walks over to the chair opposite me, and I get a good look at him. The man, or whatever he is, standing before me is tall, slender, with sandy hair worn long and a thick, full beard. His light blue eyes are kind and just a little sad. Focusing my sight for the first time in a while, I see what looks like a human form made of clear blue sky and soft golden sunlight. Not harsh or overwhelming like Michael, or even fiery like Gabriel. Not a hint of turbulence or storm, only welcoming tranquility. "Mind if I join you?" he asks. "Have a seat," I motion towards the chair. "You're one of them, aren't you? Did Odin send you?" "Yes to the first, and no to the second," he replies, smiling. "I assure you, my father has no idea I'm here. More to the point, he has no idea I am anywhere." "Your father?" I blurt. "Odin's your father?" "Yes, but it has been a long time, even by my reckoning, since we parted ways." "He walked away?" I ask. "What happened? Couldn't take the spooky, bloody scheming?" "Not quite, Alex. I died."
"Died?"
He nods, and then it clicks.
"Balder?"
He nods again, smiling. "You know," he says, "you remind me a little of your great-grandfather."
"Yeah, and maybe more than a little of dear old granddad?"
His expression becomes slightly more solemn. "I know what Loki did to you."
"How do you know?" Hugin and Munin. I've always had a way with animals. They keep me up to date, and my existence is the one and only fact they keep from their master. Nicely done, Dr. Doolittle. And as far as Loki's concerned, you definitely got it worse than I did. Speaking of which, how exactly are you alive? Rebirth, it turns out, is one of my gifts. A trick I've pulled a few times in the millennia since my blind brother's arrow felled me. But you never went back to Odin? Never even let him know you were alive? No. Why not? I ask, a little surprised to find myself speaking up for Odin. Thousands of years may have passed, but he still mourns your death like it was yesterday. I know, Baldur replies, but it's better this way. Losing me changed him, and in the long run, it has softened his fury. Surely that is worth some grief. You've seen what that fury looks like, and that was but a small taste. I see your point, I concede. Apparently my dying tends to bring out the best in people, he says with a touch of ironic humor. That may have been the first time, but it was not the last. As we speak, Kim walks up and places a big steaming bowl of noodle soup in front of me, along with the accompanying plate of sprouts, jalapenos, basil, and other garnish. So, how many times have you died? I ask, assembling my meal. Several. And each time you get reborn? To who? Human parents. Entirely unsuspecting human parents who are inevitably unprepared when I begin to manifest my true nature. When does that kick in? I slurp a mouthful of noodles. Early, right along with full knowledge and memory of who and what I am. So, even when you're a kid? He nods. Must be strange, I say, to be a toddler with the mind of a god. It is, but it is also beautiful. Even self-aware, there is still a part of me that feels like a child, full of awe and curiosity, and against all odds, that feeling has endured century after century, life after life. It keeps the world ever new for me, Alex, new and full of wonders. Sounds nice, I reply. So what have you done with all those lives? Different things in different times and places. For the last millennium or so, I've kept more to myself, working in quieter ways. And before that, I tried my hand at more ambitious action. But it never worked out the way I planned. Ain't that life, I snark. What happened? My first rebirth, or reawakening, was a bit jarring. At first, all I wanted was to see my family, my real family. I kept going on about my true father, my true mother, how I needed to get back to them. The humans who considered themselves my parents were, as you can imagine, less than thrilled. That's not the kind of talk one expects from a 4-year-old. It took some time to come to terms with my nature, a fair amount of trial and error. Stories for another time. But once I did, I was filled with a powerful sense of purpose. I wanted so badly to reach people, to help ease their pain. I just went out into the streets and talked with them, tried to turn them away from shallow and selfish pursuits towards kindness, towards compassion, towards love. I think I can see where this is going. Let me guess. They didn't want to hear it. They nailed me to a tree. You've probably heard the story. Yeah, sounds familiar, I chuckle. Ponder a moment. Then stop laughing. No. No fucking way. Are you shitting me? You were Jesus. That is a name I once wore. Yes. I just stare at him for a long time, my spoon suspended in midair with its steaming cargo of soup. Wow, I finally manage before emptying the spoon. You really got screwed there, too. I suppose you could say that. I spent most of my first life trying to convert Odin, Thor, and the rest to the cause of love. For the most part, I may as well have proselytized to the rocks and stones. The disappointing surprise of my second life was that humanity was just as deaf to my words, if not more so. Yeah, not much has changed there. But what about the fallout? You know, that whole religion that's apparently based on you? That, he says bitterly. That was Michael. He took the stories I inspired and molded them into propaganda to serve his own ambition. He used my likeness to fuel the fires of hatred and intolerance, more ammunition to drive all the other gods out and claim his solitary throne. That was likely his plan to begin with, since it was his agents that stirred up the mob and the priests and motivated my crucifixion. But you're a god, or whatever the fuck you all are. Couldn't you have just thrown those Roman soldiers off like flies? Of course. But that would only have inspired more fear and awe, more blind obedience. I wanted to show them something different. Something better. But they couldn't see it. Not enough of them to make a difference. In the centuries since, Michael's influence has only grown, and who's to say that even his death will put an end to what he started? The seed may have been Michael's, so to speak, but human nature is such fertile soil. Are you sorry he's dead? I ask. No. But I am sorry for how he died. That was needlessly cruel. It was pretty horrifying, I don't mind telling you. I've killed off quite a few brain cells trying to forget that night. My father's wrath is memorable. Understatement. You should have seen him when he was young. No, on second thought, you would never sleep again. And you would be unlikely to take your place by his side, which is exactly where you need to be. By his side? What do you mean? My absence has softened Odin more than my presence ever did. But you connect him to the world, to humanity, in a way I've never seen, and I have been keeping tabs on my father for a long time. So what? I improve him? Yes. I pause to let that sink in and notice Balder eyeing my pho hungrily. You want some? I offer, pushing the bowl towards him. Without a word, he pulls it closer, inhales the rich aroma, then hoists a spoonful of broth to his mouth. He slurps, closes his eyes for a moment, and smiles broadly. Delicious! He declares, grabs the chopsticks, and begins attacking the noodles and meat. For a few minutes, there's nothing but the sound of satisfied slurping as Balder feasts and I ponder my ability to influence a god. Okay, I finally interrupt his chowdown. So let's say I do improve him. What do you want me to do with that? There's no magic to it, Alex. He says, pushing the considerably emptier bowl back towards me. Simply be yourself. And thank you. That was wonderful. Be myself? Yes. And you'll have to find a way to work with him again. You don't improve him from a distance. I sigh heavily. I know he is not always easy to cope with, Balder allows. He can be arbitrary. Cold, obtuse. Yeah, let's not forget murderous and terrifying. Indeed. But your time with him was not all bad, was it? No, I confess. There was magic, wonder, adventure, perhaps even a higher sense of purpose and meaning? Yes, there was that. Are you really ready to let that go, Alex? To live a normal life, devoid of magic? Knowing what kinds of hidden marvels and secret terrors truly populate the world, can you ever be content to bury your head in the sand? I hate that he's right. I really fucking hate it. But this is Balder, and hate doesn't have much of a shelf life around him. Before I know it, I'm nodding in reluctant agreement, even smiling a little. No, I'm all in. But you already knew that. If you truly wanted to run, you would have run much further, hidden much deeper. You needed time and distance. Even my father seems to understand that. He's very proud. Too proud to admit that sometimes he needs connection. Even the great and wise Odin is not an island. I don't think he understood that until my death, until I was no longer there to remind him of the brighter corners of the world. You do the same for him with your irreverence and humor. So, kind of like a court jester. Great. Alex Cassander. Fool of the gods. Well, god, singular. And not a fool, Alex, far from it. You play a very important role, one which is, in part, hereditary. Remember, both Odin and Thor were once very fond of your grandfather, of Loki. Neither of them tends naturally towards levity or sociability. And no shit. And Loki made them forget themselves, made them laugh. I get it. He did more than that. He drew them out. His restless appetite for adventure gave them reason to strike out into the world, where Odin found knowledge and Thor found purpose. Without Loki, they may well have remained isolated, my father sowing random storms, my brother protective only of his own. So, strangely, the world is actually better off for his existence. I believe it may be yet better off for yours. What do you say? It's a tough concept to swallow, but I've had some time to think about it, and like it or not, Loki is in my DNA. Literally. Same with Odin. Without them, I wouldn't be me, which is to say I wouldn't be, and if this is who I am, what I am, then I might as well step up. Okay, I reply. Let's say I accept my role as Loki Light. Your words. It's not like I know how to get in touch with Odin. Oh, I wouldn't worry about that, Balder smiles. I have a feeling you'll be hearing from him sooner than later. And with that, he pushes his chair back and stands. It was good to meet you, Alex. And thank you for the soup. My pleasure. Will I see you again? Most definitely. I watch Balder walk out the door and down the street, his words still ring in my ears as I slurp down the last of the broth, walk to the counter, pay, and make my own way out into the night. I do the last leg of my drive home in silence, taking lazy drags on a joint, trying to puzzle out my limited options and make some sense of my apparently destined path as Odin's executive assistant. Destiny. That's a hell of a thing to wrap your head around. Throws all previous assumptions out the window. I guess I've always believed that we're our own creatures, our own creations. Bullshit. We belong to the gods we belong to. Simple as that. There are parts of us we cannot exercise, cannot alter. Still, it's not the same as helplessness. If Balder is right, and the odds against seem pretty slim, then I have a role to play. After all, that's why I got myself into this gods-ridden mess in the first place. The promise of adventure, the chance to make my life epic, heroic. Well, Alex, be careful what you wish for. I pull up outside my apartment, step out of the car, and immediately feel something in the air. It's still, silent. Walking to my front door, I don't hear so much as an insect. Then the quiet is broken by the ruffling of feathers. Looking up, I see two large ravens perched on either side of the door. One cranes its head, looks directly at me, and winks. I smell dark, loamy earth and copper. "Hello, Alex," a familiar voice comes from the shadows behind me. "I am sorry for how we parted. I hope you've had time to recover." I nod. "Good," he replies, "because we have work to do." This has been The Gods We Belong To, Season 1. The Gods We Belong To is written, performed, edited, and produced by Dan Goldstein. Theme music is I'll Drive by Daniel Birch. Additional music, Brushed Bells in the Wind, Glass Bells Dancing with a Synthesizer, The Fugue, Say It Again, I'm Listening, and Rise of the Phosphor by Daniel Birch, and The True Entity of Life by Daniel Birch and Ben Paley. You can find Daniel online at danielbirchmusic.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show and help spread the word. Tell a friend. Tell an enemy, post, tweet, create a colossal Gods We Belong To crop circle, or, if you're feeling up to it, why not a henge? However you do it, thank you. You can reach the show on Twitter and Instagram at Gods We Belong To. Rest assured, faithful friends, this is only the end of Season 1. Season 2 will be here before you know it. So, until then, don't do anything Alex wouldn't do. Hey folks, what's going on? This is Dan Goldstein, creator of The Gods We Belong To. Just wanted to come on here at the end of Season 1 and just say thank you to everybody out there who's been listening, everyone who's taken this this trip with me, tuning in to hear me tell these stories week after week. You guys have been amazing. I mean, we're seeing people coming from the U.S., from the UK, New Zealand, Canada, Germany, Australia, Norway, Uruguay, Sweden, Denmark, Gita, looking at you there, Russia, Kyrgyzstan, Poland, Singapore, Russian Federation, just, it's amazing. Even if it's only a couple people in any place, just knowing that there are people all around the world listening to this is great. You guys are fantastic. So feel free to reach out on Twitter or Instagram and say hi, and otherwise just keep listening, and we'll be in touch soon with news about Season 2. It is on the way and already in the works. Take care.